Superintendent, Dr. Lori Simon. Please welcome her to the podium.
Well, good evening, and thank you for being here tonight. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
All right, great.
Welcome
to our first annual State of the District Address. And this is an event that I plan to have annually now to really engage with our community and provide you with our progress in our continuous improvement work with our district. So here is our agenda for tonight. I'm going to start by providing you with an overview of our recent state assessment results from last spring. Then I'm going to spend quite a bit of time talking to you about the themes that emerged from my listening sessions across the district and community. I'm going to finish with our goals and priorities for this school year that really are going to position us to accelerate our work moving forward. And then we're going to conclude tonight with a question and answer period. So let's start by looking at our attendance. This is a topic that I have had a lot of discussion about across the community. As we look at our results from last spring, we see that last school year, our results and our attendance really were unchanged. What's most significant, though, is that you see that we are significantly under where the state average is. And it really doesn't matter which student group, if we break it down by subgroups, whether we're talking about our Caucasian students or our Native students or our special ed students, et cetera. Every group is quite significantly below where the state is. And so this is an area of focus. As we look at our English language arts results, we see that the state went up about 3 percentage points last year, and we went up about 3.8%. When you look at where we are, though, we are still about 4 percentage points below where the state on average is achieving. Math, we had a more significant gain. The state also went up about 3%, but we went up about 4.5%. And right now, we are right where the state is. We're a fraction of a percentage point above them, but that's statistically insignificant. When we look at the area of science, our results were largely unchanged, and we are just a bit below where the state is. Now looking at the area of college and career readiness, we were down 4.65%, and that was largely due to ACT test scores also going down in this area. The state also went down, and we are performing about right where the state is. It was a similar story with our math results. We went down almost 4%. As did the state. The state went down about 2%, and we are performing where the state is. When we look at the area of high school completion, you're going to see a similar story to what you saw with attendance. While our completion rates went up ever so slightly, we are still well under where the state is in this area. And finally, as we look at our four-year cohort graduation rates, we did go up by about 2.5%, while the state held relatively steady. But yet, you see that pretty significant gap of about 8 percentage points compared to where the state is. So the past 3 months, I have been engaging across the district and across the community with a wide range of stakeholders holding listening sessions. And I asked every group the same two questions, starting with, what do you think our strengths are as a district? And what are our challenges, and where do we need to improve? And I can tell you that as I begin to discuss our strengths, there was a lot of consensus among the groups. Starting with, first and foremost, we have great students, and our greatest strength is the diversity of our students. And I can tell you, having visited classrooms and having spent time engaging with students in classrooms and having listening sessions with students from all three of our high schools, our students are very impressive. They are thoughtful, they're articulate, and they really care about their schools and about our district and about their education. Another area of great consensus is that we have many great, caring, and committed staff, teachers, and leaders in our district. And I can tell you, our students talked at length on this topic. We have so many staff and leaders that are willing to go above and beyond every day. And our families, and especially our students, really appreciate that. We provide a quality education and opportunities for students. And students have many opportunities, both inside and outside of class, to be involved in their education. And our students said that with so many opportunities, there really is something for just about everyone. And when there is a need, they can go to their administration and start a new club or propose something that perhaps should be added to the offerings. We have great families and community. Our teachers and our staff talked about how supportive and involved our families are, and that our community is willing to do more, and they're waiting to hear what can they do to better partner with us. And our communication is improving. It's not there yet, but it's improving. Staff and families talked about liking the weekly updates, the monthly e-newsletters, all the positive news stories, and the increased use of social media. And then there was this area that was really kind of a mixed response area. I heard that from some groups it was a strength, and then I heard from others, well, it used to be a strength, and now it's really an area that we need to improve. And that includes professional development for our staff, as well as our balanced literacy and inquiry math implementation. So those were the strengths, and as I said, there was a lot of consensus in those areas. And there was also a lot of consensus in the areas that we need to improve. In Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, he devotes an entire chapter, chapter 4, on a topic in which he says we need to confront the brutal facts. And he says very clearly, before an organization can make decisions and chart a course for improvement, they have to begin by confronting their brutal facts. And so that's part of why we're here tonight, because I think that we need to, as a district and community, confront our own brutal facts. And so here are the areas that were identified as challenges and areas that we need to improve. First and foremost, I heard very clearly that we need clear leadership and vision. We need a strategic plan, clear leadership and vision for the future and direction of our district, as well as processes for engaging our stakeholders in decision making. We need to improve communication as well as the perception of our district. We need to continue to improve our communication and our transparency in our communication in the work of our district. We need to improve our website, and we need to act as a school system versus a system of independent schools. We need more collaboration and partnership with our families and with our community. And we need to create opportunities for partnership and volunteering in every school and better partner with our families and community to build on our strengths and address our challenges. We need to increase the rigor, relevance, and innovation of our programming. We need to increase our expectations across the curriculum for every student. We need to expand STEM and other rigorous programming and create a culture of challenge and innovation. And I can tell you that our students in every high school spoke at length on this topic. They talked about the need to have more opportunity, for example, to focus on nonfiction writing across the curriculum so that they feel better prepared for college, for ACT testing, and for their life beyond college. And they talked quite a bit about the need to look at career in tech ed and STEM and other areas of rigorous programming. We need to create more pathways for career and college readiness. And we need to really prioritize college and career readiness, expanding opportunities for college and career exploration and planning, and develop pathways for individual students with varying interests, strengths, and experiences. And this is another topic that our students spoke very articulately about as they are contemplating their future careers, their college planning. They really feel that this is an area that we can significantly improve. We need to improve literacy and math instruction, and we need to focus on excellent core instruction in reading, writing, and math every day, with a focus on earlier intervention again, so that our students have the firm foundation that they need by third grade to be successful students beyond. And so that we don't have to spend so much time doing interventions with students beyond third grade. We need to improve staff morale and retention. And while there was a lot of discussion on this topic across groups, on a number of issues that really have impacted staff morale and retention, really the bottom line is we need to show our staff that we value them and take things off their plates so that they can focus on the most important work, and that is teaching and learning with our students every day. And our high school students said, you know, they were really in tune with this topic, and they said, we don't want to lose our great teachers. We need to improve our professional learning and really need to look at a different model of professional development with much more training in the areas of technology and innovation, cultural relevance and understanding, literacy and math, differentiation for individual student strength and needs, and we need to provide more and ongoing leadership development for our school leaders. We need to look at school climate. And while most families believe that our schools are safe places for their children and that we have good routines in place for safety that are practiced and reinforced, there are concerns about consistency in discipline, particularly related to bullying, and the need for more proactive work with bullying prevention. We need to look at our facilities and our improvements there. And we need to improve our facilities to provide equitable learning environments that meet 21st century learning needs. So now that I've finished my listening sessions, my next steps are to spend the next couple of months really examining and observing and learning. At the district level, I'm going to be taking a deep look at our structures that we have in place, our processes for our work and for the efficiency of our work, and our staffing. Are we staffed appropriately to provide the right support for schools to do their work with our kids every day? Then at the school level and at the district level, I want to observe and continue to observe teaching and learning as often as I can. I want to take a look at our school climate and our PBIS implementation, our preparation in the area of college and career readiness, take a look and participate in as much of the professional development opportunities as I'm able to, as well as participate in Early Release Wednesdays and observe the work of PLCs. And with that, we've identified four improvement goals for this school year based on our outcomes from our state tests and results last year. And these are the four areas: attendance, English language arts proficiency, math proficiency, and our graduation rates. Starting with attendance, these are the strategies that as a district we're employing to improve in this area, beginning with raising awareness really throughout our district and our community. As I've been having a lot of discussion on this topic, what I'm learning is I don't think people and even internal staff realized the degree to which we have a truancy and attendance problem. And we do, and we need to be really clear about that so that we can begin to identify barriers and address those barriers, continue to develop partnerships to improve our outcomes, like the Rapid Ride Free Transportation for all K-12 students, and the work with United Way with the grade level reading campaign, an area which they've identified attendance as a strong indication and a factor of reading by third grade. And at every school, each school has developed a school improvement plan identifying each of the goal areas, including attendance, as well as strategies to meet their goals. In the area of English language arts, we're going to really focus by improving our core reading instruction. Right now, we are doing an assessment of where we are at with our balanced literacy implementation, and we are going to begin monitoring for fidelity. Principals within their own professional learning communities are taking a look at how can they work together as a PLC to affect strong implementation and core instruction, and we will also be starting in the spring doing some learning walks, groups of principals and central administration together to really take a look at teaching and learning in this area and then have discussion and really calibrate our thinking around what are our expectations and do we really all understand what effective reading instruction looks like. We are also in the process of adopting Reading Plus district-wide. Reading Plus is a technology platform and tool to improve reading. We piloted it in several schools with some great results, and it's also been proven to be effective with students who have dyslexia or other reading issues. We're going to increase our nonfiction writing. Because research says very clearly that when you increase nonfiction writing, it impacts student achievement in all areas. We're going to focus on power teaching strategies, which all of our title school teachers have participated in, and how do we expand from there? And again, this area is addressed in school improvement plans. In the area of math, it really is looking much the same in terms of our strategies for improvement, starting with improving our core math instruction, beginning with looking at our implementation, and then monitoring, as well as increasing our use of the power teaching strategies and the goals at the school level. And then finally, increasing our graduation rates. And really, everything's connected. Attendance impacts reading, impacts math, and they all impact graduation. And so really starting with that focus on improved attendance, but also beginning to look at alternative pathways to graduation for students, as well as providing them the supports to meet their graduation goals. And this is an area that all three high schools have also developed a goal in. We've also developed several areas for improvement, several priorities for our work this year, beginning with improving our communication and transparency. I have also charged a task force in the development of a new website for our district. I have charged another task force with taking a deep look at our current professional development model and structures, including our use of early release time, to come up with some recommendations that we think will improve our efforts moving forward. I've begun to reorganize, and I'm going to continue to reorganize to maximize our resources, innovation in our work, as well as the support for our schools. I'm going to create a community advisory council. And then finally, we've begun the development of a new strategic plan. So with that, I am going to turn it over to Katie Urban, and she is going to share a little bit about our efforts to improve our communication and transparency.
Started last fall, I've looked for a number of ways to make sure our families and our staff are informed, because if our families are informed, our community is informed, we're going to build support for our schools, and we're just going to build more trust. And so it's extremely important that we are making sure that our families are getting the messages that we need them to get. So for me, that really starts with making sure that our staff knows what's going on. We have 1,700 plus people that work in our district. And if they are unaware of what's happening at one school or at the district level, then it makes us all look bad. And we want them to be our messengers. So it really starts with making sure they know our story. And one of the things that we've done is we started sending out a board brief. So after every Board of Ed meeting, I send out just the highlights of the meeting so everybody kind of knows what's going on and put links and those kinds of things. Also, Dr. Simon sends out a weekly superintendent's update that talks about what she's doing, what the senior leadership team is doing, and it makes us work together instead of as separate schools. It's more inclusive. For our families, we have a number of different tools that we use. Center Voice is our mass dialing system. We use that for a number of different things, whether it's to send an important message or just different things happening at your school, we're going to use that. It also has email and text capabilities. We also have an e-newsletter. We're going to have the third one go out this week. And we're going to send that out through our Center Voice system, through email. It'll also be available on our website and through social media. We also are very active on social media, and the latest Pew Research would show that most of you are too. So anytime we have a big announcement, you're going to find it there. So make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And also just know that we're going to have all kinds of features that show what your kids are doing. And so it's a really great opportunity to kind of, for us to communicate with you and not just to you. The local media has been really great. I am very grateful to them. Anytime I have a cute story or an important announcement and I call one of my friends, they will immediately do a story. I never have them tell me no. So they've been really great at partnering with us and helping us to get our message out. Finally, we have a public access channel. We put our board meetings on that channel, and we also have new videos that we add there. And if you don't know, it's Mid-Continent Cable TV Channel 19, and VAST is 143. We're going to really strive this year to improve our crisis communication. Communication is such an important part of any crisis plan. And so there's a couple of things that you may notice that are happening now that didn't happen so much last year. For example, if we have a lockdown drill, or if we go to secure in place, or if we have a true lockdown for any reason, you're going to get a call, and it's going to give you as many details as we can. and it'll be as timely as possible. It's important, obviously, that we gather as many facts as we can, but we want to make sure that you know first and that you can count on us telling you what's going to happen. And then we're working on rebranding our district, and that's going to be part of the strategic plan that comes later. And we just want to make sure that we're sending out the same message every single time. And so watch for that. It is definitely coming. And finally, if you have any feedback or ideas on how I can better communicate or the district can better communicate with you, you can just give me a call. It's right up there on the screen.
Just stand right here.
All right, the new website. Ever since I've been here, the website's been kind of an area of a little bit of controversy. So this year, we decided to go over with the new website. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit tonight about what we've done so far and what the next few months are going to look like.
The objectives of the current new website are going to be improving communication with our stakeholders, providing better customer service for parents and students, and to really get an appealing, professional-looking website that's mobile-friendly, which if any of you try to use our current website with your phone, it doesn't work very well so at all. What we have done so far, we're starting the vendor selection process. We have formed a task force made up of a variety of people to put together what the requirements of the new website will be in order to put together their RFP. The RFP went out last week. We've had a lot of interest already. They'll do that on the 19th of November. Regarding the process for developing a website, once we choose a vendor, we'll develop a project team and process sub-teams based upon what we're looking for and what information we need to gather. We'll develop a plan with the vendor, and then we'll go through the whole software development process where we'll design, test, and then probably design some more on it. Some of the challenges that typically we see in projects like this are scope creep. If any of you ever built a house, you probably experienced that. Start out with a plan, and then as you build, add things on. It's kind of the same thing with the all pieces. We want to make sure we have a good process in place for managing the new website. Right now, what we have a lot of different people that are updating and adding things to it, and then over time, if you're not willing to sit them on processes and what you let people put in, what you don't get, some inconsistencies, and then it's hard for people to find the information they need to find. One thing that's important to understand is for part of this project is we have the district level website, which contains all the district offices, and then we have school landing pages, which are usually a single page that has specific school information. That's pretty much the scope of this project. We also have the individual school websites that the schools build and maintain. We are going to work on designing some custom templates for the schools so they're consistent across the thing, but that's going to be the second phase of the project. The first phase is just the district level stuff and the school and the pages. One of the other big challenges we have is we have just so much information out there. Currently, we have about 2,000 pages on our site. The district level stuff all the way down to the school website, down to the teaching websites. The next few slides are examples of other district websites that the task force really like. And I'm just going to go through these real quick. See much different than what we got now. All right, the milestones for the project, the RFP submission, which we've talked about already, is done this day in October. We're going to submit it by early December, and depending on the vendor schedule, we'll start the project in December, January, and get it all done on the day of. And next, Valerie's going to talk professional learning.
I'll drop it. Good evening again. I'm Valerie Seals, Curriculum Instruction Assessment and Staff Development for Rapid City Area Schools, and excited to talk to you a little bit about our Professional Learning Task Force. This was one of the first projects Dr. Simon asked us to get started on, as professional learning in our district was a clear need from her listening sessions. Little bit about the task force itself. Myself and Dustin Blaha, who works with me in staff development, are co-chairing this, but the group that we have selected to participate includes teachers and administrators from elementary and secondary from throughout our district. And while we're a new committee and have only met a couple times, I would like to tell you about what our project looks like, what our accomplishments are going to be, and what we've done so far. One of the first meetings that we've had, of the two we've had, was definitely digging into what research says about professional learning systems and what's effective. And so we have pulled together a group, we've started digging into the research, and we've set our charge statement for the group. And you can see that we're both basically trying to complete three different tasks. And one is identify what the appropriate system will look like, keeping in mind that when you're talking about 1,000 certified employees, you have a lot of varying needs. We are grouping those into three broad categories. We have individual needs. Veteran teachers versus new teachers have different learning needs. We have the building needs. So a small Title I school on one side of town might have a different set of needs than a large high school on the other side of town. And then finally, how will the system address district needs? Because there are different initiatives or curriculum material adoptions, things that we have at the district level that we need to get out to all of our staff as well. Second, we are charged with determining how we will assess the effectiveness of the learning system. So it's one thing to bring groups together and provide professional learning, but how is that impacting instruction in the classroom? So what will the assessment system be? Finally, once we determine what we want for a system, we will come forward to the senior leadership team with some recommendations for supports, for calendar, that will allow for professional learning system-wide, not just hit and miss as we've sometimes had in the past. Again, we've met twice. We have a short timeline, so we're putting the meetings pretty close together here. By January, we hope to have completed our work. To date, we've established our mission and our vision of professional learning for Rapid City, including a definition of what that means. We've identified a list of current opportunities, which is broad and long, from workshops to Wednesday early dismisses to our partnerships with our local universities. We have lots of opportunities, but now we're looking at the effectiveness of each of those opportunities. We are also looking at exemplar plans, because they exist. There are districts that have taken this work on before us and have developed plans that we're reviewing to see what pieces of those would fit with Rapid City Area Schools' needs. And finally, we'll identify what are our personnel resources and our structural resources, including calendar, taking that forward to senior leadership and the Board of Ed. These recommendations will be considered for the 17-18 year, but certainly a much broader plan than that will carry into the 5-10 year range. And I am going to give it back to Dr. Simon again.
So early this fall, I began to take a look at some reorganization and did some early reorganization of a position to develop a new position called the Director of Strategic Partnerships in College and Career Readiness. And that position is really, I think, going to be pivotal in these areas, not only looking at the development of a formalized volunteer program, really tapping into our community assets, our retirees, our community, our business partners, our families, to ensure that we are developing strong partnerships. But then also looking at preparing kids for college and career beyond school, and how can we better partner with our businesses, our community, our higher ed institutions, to really provide more opportunities and pathways and experiences for our students. In the coming weeks, I'm going to be doing some further reorganization, and we'll be making and communicating those decisions by the start of the new year. Another plan that I have is to develop or create a community advisory council. And I would like this council to be broadly representative of our district and our community, and be comprised of people in our community with kids in our school and maybe people who don't have students in our school. But really, put together a group that's reflective of our community and that I can meet with monthly to really bring the work of our district forward and get feedback from a broad community group on our progress and the work of our district. My plan is to get that in place hopefully by January. We're in the process of putting together an application, and we will be communicating more information about that soon. So if you think you'd like to be involved, please be on the look for that information. And then finally, we have begun the development of a new strategic plan. And I think this is going to be really, really critical for the future of our district. We need a strong vision and plan in place to guide the work of our district. And so when we think about what does a strong strategic plan do, it really serves as a roadmap to define a district's direction and priorities. It gets everybody in the district working on the same page toward common goals. A strong strategic plan that you keep alive and working really guides decision-making as well as drives the alignment of actions and resources across the district. And then finally, it communicates to all of you, our stakeholders, our direction and our priorities. So here's our process and our timeline for moving forward. The work is going to be driven by two main groups. We have a steering committee of 12 people, myself, as well as senior team members, board members, principals, our Rapid City Education Association leader, as well as some community leaders are involved in that steering committee. And the work of that group is really to kind of provide the direction and then refine the work as the process unfolds. Then that group will also be part of a larger core planning team of about 50 to 55 people. And it's really important to us that this core planning team has broad community representation. We also want to make sure that it's representative of the geography of our district as well as the demographics of our students. And so we are still in the process of seeking applications through the end of this week. Still looking for more families as well as business and community leaders to join us in this work, because it's really going to be this large team that's going to be the driver and the developer of our core ideas and concepts, our goals and our strategies of our strategic plan. We're going to have opportunities for community-wide engagement. We're going to be developing a community-wide stakeholder survey as one piece of that, and as the process develops, we'll be identifying other ways for broader community engagement. And then finally, we are taking a more focused approach, and the reason for doing so is we have so much existing data. Why create the wheel? We have the MGT study that was done last year. We have the needs assessment that was done district-wide. We have the superintendent search survey data, my listening session data. We have a lot of data that we can use as part of this process. And our timelines are, we're really just getting started this month, kind of getting grounded in the process as a steering committee and core planning team. In December, we'll be doing the stakeholder survey. In January, we'll be reviewing that survey data as well as all of our existing data. And then in February and March, we'll be developing those goals and strategies. And then in April and the spring, engaging the broader community in the discussion. So before we go to our question and answer discussion, first of all, if you have any note cards with questions, principals, would you just maybe do a little walkthrough and make sure that we get all of those collected? We're going to group like questions together so that we're not repetitive with same questions. But before we go there, I do just want to say thank you so much for being here. And I'm so grateful my voice lasted. I'm getting over a cold, and I was a little bit concerned about that. But it's really great to see so many people here who really care about our students and the work of our district. So thank you, and we look forward to responding to your questions. I'm going to turn it over to Katie to facilitate.
Okay, so we probably aren't going to get to every question, and that's okay. The questions that we don't get to, we're going to work to answer over the next few days, and we're hoping by Monday or shortly thereafter, they'll be available on our website. So if we don't get your questions answered tonight, please watch for them on our website. So I'm just going to pick a question out of this basket, and then the appropriate person from our senior leadership team will answer. So the first one is, how do you see building equity across the system?
You know, I'll begin by answering that question. I think it really begins when you look at that need that was identified earlier. Equity, first of all, we define in so many ways. When I think about equity, I use the definition generally that students and staff are getting what they need to be successful. And so I think there are several things for us to think about. Certainly we need to look at continued development of cultural understanding across our community and across our system. I also think that we need to take a close look at how are we using our resources? Are we using them in a way that's really maximizing the resources? Are we using them in a way that's equitable? And when there are built-in factors related to school funding and allocation of resources, such as all regulations around certain funding streams like Title I funds, are we educating our families and our community around why some schools do have more resources than others? But having said that, even within that area, I think there's more opportunity for us to look as a system, how do we better use even those resources to provide more opportunities for all of our schools and staff, so that ultimately we're providing and producing good results for our students.
Can transportation be arranged for 9th and 10th graders that want to take electives at Central or Stevens? I'm assuming they're talking about Rapid City High School students. I think this is probably a Dave question. I'm going to pass the mic.
There's several issues associated with 9th and 10th grade student transportation. One is when we attempted that in the past, I think the educators are not too excited about hopping a bus to go anywhere. We do this year, fortunately, for the mayor's initiative, have rapid rides, which is free to all students. So they can make those trips. One of the problems with that, or one of the things that is a challenge, is has to fit the schedules. And one of the things we have between our three high schools is a variety of schedules. Stevens High School is on a more traditional schedule, and Rapid City High School is on a trimester system. And so when courses are offered and when they start and finish and when times are available are different in every single high school. So for students to be able to transfer between those schools, to some extent, the schedule when you start to standardize what we would consider on buses between any of the three schools. And then it would just be the perception of students about whether they're going to hop on a bus to get to Central or to get to Stevens or to get to the high school for the coursework as it gets available.
If I could just weigh in very quickly on this topic. I do think that we need to do a little bit more outside the box thinking. I think there are ways that we can use technology to give students access maybe to courses or classes at other campuses without having to leave their own school. And I think this is something that we need to just think more creatively about to really open up our pathways for students.
Is there any possibility that you will bring back literacy leaders or coaches at every building, including reading recovery?
You know, this is an area that I think we do need to take a hard look at in terms of, as I stated earlier, my next steps are really look at our processes, our structures, our how we're staffed to best support the work in our schools. And I've heard a lot of discussion on this topic. And I do think that we need to kind of loop our thinking again and think about how do we put that early support in for reading so that students are reading by third grade, because it's so critical. Because beyond third grade, they need to read to learn. And if you're still learning to read while you're having to read to learn, you're set up on a course of frustration. And so,
what can the community do to assist in your efforts?
You know, I think in the coming weeks, and as we develop our strategic plan, a lot of that is going to be coming much more clear as we get our new director position in place and as she starts her work. In the coming weeks, I think, you know, in the areas of partnership, working, and developing those partnerships with our families and community, we're going to identify some clear ways that our community and our families can better support us and we can collaborate with you, all for the common goal of increasing learning and achievement for our students.
What is your stance on early intervention? Are there plans to extend our programs to reach more preschool age students?
You know, this is a topic of discussion that I've already begun to have with some in the community. I came from a district where we saw phenomenal results in a school-based targeted four-year-old intervention program. And in a couple of our schools where they also use some of their additional school resources and title dollars to duplicate what the district had allocated for classrooms. We saw that by the time those students were done with the four-year-old program, done with kindergarten, and going into first grade, gaps were significantly closing. And so early intervention is very key, and I think it's an area that we need to look at, not only as a district, but as a state.
What is the timeline for accomplishing the four goals?
You know, we develop those goals as year-long goals, but really they're going to be longer goals than that. The work of school and district improvement is a process. And a lot of this year is about looking at what does our foundation for teaching and learning look like, and how do we ensure and organize ourselves to make sure that we are using and leveraging our resources as part of our abilities to body. And so while there are annual goals, where we put some measurable targets in place, we do know that we're going to be looking at the work of our district as a process of continuous improvement.
Why can't we have a bus system for all schools? Wouldn't that help greatly the problem with students being tardy and absent?
We run 72 different bus routes right now across our entire school. We bus kids from K to 8, and that is what state statute calls for. The 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders are not included in the schedule. As Dr. Simon looks at the resources available to the Robinson schools, both financial and human, certainly opportunities that exist within those resources to expand, either whether that be transportation routes, whether that be adult to the city routes, whether it's expand those that allow for additional students to get public transportation, all will be reviewed and looked at to make sure that we do everything we can to get kids in school on time.
And I would just add that with the city's new initiative, we are seeing some gains and some differences in attendance. Now, obviously, they aren't going to every school because their routes only run in city limits. But they are looking at their routes. They're doing a study right now. It won't be available for about a year, so it's not going to happen tomorrow. But there is a possibility that we could see some expansion. I have noticed that more and more technology is being implemented into the school district. Are there any plans to start incorporating computer labs or classes at an elementary level to ensure that our kids are prepared for 21st century technology?
The end of the question.
I'm sorry. The end of the question threw me there a little bit. Can you see about computer labs?
Are there any plans to start incorporating computer labs at an elementary level to ensure that our kids are prepared for 21st century technology?
She would be better to answer what was ordered for each building, but at the elementary level, we do have computer labs. The name of the course or the instructor for that has changed when we went to the IMS position, in which you need a specialist position in our elementaries. But each of our students, K-5, do attend that course either for 2:30 minute periods a week or for 60. In addition, we have purchased a tremendous amount of laptops and portable devices that teachers have access to in their classrooms as well.
Just one point of clarification. We just went through our refresh this summer. We have a lot more devices this time around than the last time. The amount of money that we spent is the same. And the reason we have more devices is because we went to an HP Stream, which is a very inexpensive netbook-based device. So that's why you're seeing a lot more devices in the schools.
What plans are being developed for Title I low-income students who are struggling with attendance, behaviors, etc.?
These are areas that all schools are working through in their buildings, improvement plans, and as part of their Title I improvement plan. And I can't speak to all the specifics, but what I can tell you is that every school is looking at those four core areas that I identified. Attendance continues to be a struggle, and so they're looking at how to better partner with families, how to provide more incentives, you know, what programming can they do at the school level to improve attendance, because that really plays a significant role in how kids do in school with reading, with math, etc. And the school climate certainly is a piece of that. Just at the principal meeting this morning, we were talking about our PBIS implementation. And PBIS stands for Positive Behavior Interventions and Supports, which is very grounded in research and talks about what are the structures and protocols that we put in place that are just part and core of the routine of school that proactively have a very significant impact on school climate so that we're spending less of our time on reaction. And as I shared earlier, in the coming weeks, I really want to dive into that area and see how are our efforts going and are we implementing well and how can we improve in that area. And so that everything within that question is really a work in process as part of those school improvement plans.
We have time for just a couple more questions. The effect of schools research in the 1980s indicated that students were more successful when there were fewer of them in the building. To my knowledge, that has not been refuted. Why do we continue to build on the Central of Stevens? So why do we continue to build on the Central of Stevens? In other words, why are we making our schools larger if this study says that kids do better with fewer kids in the building?
As opposed to building in high school. I'm not quite clear on the question, but I will say this about class size. When we look at the research also, and when I look at our class sizes and some of the disparities in class sizes, that's concerning. I think that's something that we need to take a look at. When I look at that early intervention piece that I was talking about earlier, and I look at some of the sizes of our kindergarten and third grade classes versus some of our high school classes, and I see how large sometimes our kindergarten and early classes are, we have to look at that. Because kindergarten, first, second, third grade, we've got to have class sizes at a number that teachers have the time and the ability to really work with all the individual needs. We have kids that come into kindergarten that really come with skills and experiences across the board. And so it's really important that we take a look at this area, look at our class sizes, and how do we put some class size ratios in place that really make sense given our resources.
And the final question, is the district doing any financial studies of other similar size districts to help with budget cuts? Dave.
We looked at a variety of issues. I have a system in my office that I use to call up school districts of similar size, similar demographics that receive similar types of funding. One of the challenges in hearing us when you go outside of the state is that South Dakota's funding mechanism is vastly different from even neighboring states. Dr. Simon was getting used to, you got one funding mechanism, and she's used to about seven different funding mechanisms that are all categorical aid that provide various opportunities for those school districts if they meet the requirements. In South Dakota, it's property taxes and state aid, and you have general fund, capital outlay, special ed, and it's all run through the same way. I work with about 15 different business managers across the Western United States in very similar sized school districts. 2008 in the entire United States went into a recession. All the things they were doing as the governors were cutting CA, they were losing dollars that were available. How are they approaching different things and different issues? And what I can tell you is the things we've done in Iraq City have been fairly common compared to those other districts and those other states. They're very similar approaches to budget cuts. You try to affect the least amount of students, maybe the largest amount of dollars, and at the same time make sure that you're able to preserve program and opportunities for students. And as long as we keep that at the forefront, we do what we do. We don't get everybody staff to be in that position at all, and hopefully within the formula we'll have a few years where we don't have to consider that. But for now, I can tell you that I do use that network pretty regularly on a variety of issues, not just other things.
If I could just
jump in on this topic. As I look at our budget, we are very typical compared to most other districts in that the large majority of our budget goes to salaries and benefits in the neighborhood of 85%, which generally makes most districts with about 15% for everything else. So that's where we have to take a deep look. I think we do need to look at a number of things. We have to look at and really use data to determine what's working and what's not, so that we can quit spending resources and time and energy creating these platters for everyone to work with, no matter what their role is in the district, to get more focused in our work on what is working, and so that we can streamline our efforts and our resources. I think when I look at our community, there's so much more opportunity for partnership and volunteering with our families, with our retirees, with our businesses, with our community partners. And how do we better leverage some of those resources to provide support for our district? Had I come from a district that had an award-winning volunteer program, I can tell you that we trained several thousand volunteers to go into all of our schools, from busloads of corporate leaders and business people, from companies to retirees to just people that wanted to be involved, and provided them with training and support so that they could help us in real strategic ways with literacy and math. And an in-kind donation to our district of $2 million a year. So how can we better partner with our community? I know we can do better in that area. And then certainly, we can look at what grants are out there that really could have impact in a targeted way in our district, and continue to look really at all funding stream sources as well as other resources to support the work of our district. Because there's never going to be enough. That's just the case, you know, pretty much everywhere. And so how do we better leverage the assets across our community?
All right, so we still have a handful of questions, and like I said, we're going to try and get these answered and get them up on our website by Monday or shortly thereafter. Thank you so much for coming tonight and being a part of this conversation. And again, my phone... you can always call it, and I will pick up most of the time. Thank you so much for coming.